Wow. Wow. Wow.
Okay, guys. I told him I'm doing the intro, so ready or not. Let me do just as fast an introduction. I think you guys know Hank and John inside and out. Yeah. But in case you didn't know, John's a great author, and you know what? I don't want to blow it. They are waiting in the wings, quite literally. Quite literally.
There we go.
So join me in welcoming Hank and John Green.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
I'm not going to sing. Thank you so much. Great to see you. Ah, thank you. Wow. Wow, 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 wow. Thanks for coming. Congratulations on being in the real world equivalent of the main room. Sorry. Well, it's going to be okay.
Camera.
I think it's that thing.
I thought it was like a projector.
Oh, it's that thing. Hello, that thing. I don't know the difference.
Yeah. What's up?
My name is John Green. I write novels for teenagers. This is my brother, Hank. He writes songs and also an environmental technology website called Ego Geek. We have this video blog called Brotherhood 2.0. No, you're laughing, but some people don't know what the hell is going on. Hank is going to play a song.
Okay. There's no way that I can play a song that's quite that awesome. But
yeah, it's true.
I can't live up to that cheer.
He's not good enough at the guitar. Boo. I'm going to do that all night. Get ready.
John, have you been putting on a little weight during the tour?
Oh, I'm gonna turn off my mic now so I can sing along.
Okay, you don't want to hear it. Sometimes he sings along and he doesn't bring the mic far enough away from his face, and everyone's like, "What is going on? Is that a harmony? Is that like some kind of expressionist harmony? It's modern art harmony. This song is about a book. It's about a book that doesn't exist. Which is sad, but maybe someday. It's called Book 8. I know I'm not the only one who wants to know more about Harry's sons. I really do think there's an unwritten story, and I think it's time to put fingers to keys. A lot of people I know want to know more about Grindelwald and Dumbledore. I really do think that they both batted lefty, and I think there's probably a good story there for Book 8. I want a Book 8. I want a Book 8. And I want J.K. Rowling to say that the epilogue was crap, because we all know it was crap. And I want J.K. Rowling to say that Voldemort had a son, and the story's just begun. And I want J.K. Rowling to say that she's writing Book 8. A lot of people I know want to hear the tale of the mysterious veil. I really do think that... You guys are having a little fight and you distracted me. A lot of people I know want to hear the tale of the mysterious veil. I really do think it's a dimensional portal, and I think Sirius is in Middle Earth. And I know I want to hear the one about Hagrid's dad and Hagrid's mom. I really do think that that's nearly impossible, and I think there's probably a good story there. For book 8. I want a book 8. I want a book 8. And I want J.K. Rowling to say that the epilogue was crap, because we all know it was crap. And I want J.K. Rowling to say that Voldemort had a son and the story's just begun. And I want J.K. Rowling to say that she's writing book 8. She could call it Harry Potter and the Pillar of Storge, or Harry Potter and the Starfighters of Ajumar, or Harry Potter and the Underpaid Librarians, or Harry Potter and the crew of the Starship Enterprise, or Harry Potter and Ann Arbor, Michigan. I want a book 8, yeah, book 8. Oh, Hank.
That's my brother, Hank. So I'm going to introduce the show for you now. That's Hank. Hank's debut CD, So Jokes, No Lie, Real CD, studio produced. Just came out 2 weeks ago and is only available right now on our tour. If you want to come, oh my gosh, Dan John Miller and his wife Tracy are here. Dan John is the narrator of the Paper Towns audiobook and also a major American genius. And someone should give up their seat for his wife right now. Oh, there's one right here. Come up here. I insist. I mean, I can hardly carry around my extra weight. So Hank's debut CD just came out, So Jokes. You can buy it here from the Catherine, who I think will potentially be at one of those tables. Also, would you stand up if you're wearing a homemade Nerdfighter t-shirt today? Wow. Right over there we have a pink t-shirt featuring a green dragon breathing a fire of orange glitter. You can have a long and fulfilling life and never encounter anything like that. Thank you for everyone who made your own t-shirts. We've always believed that Nerdfighter t-shirts are best homemade, but if for some reason you don't want to make one, you can buy one from us. We actually ran out of t-shirts, sorry about that, but you can order them. It's all the fun of having the t-shirt, except that you don't get it. But you do get to pay for it. Spoon fingers! Okay, so a couple other things. Also, I think Borders will be here selling my books if you happen to not have them yet, or if you think, oh my gosh, this would be a great present for the holidays. And then the last thing, and the most important thing, is that throughout the tour, we've been raising money for Save the Children Bangladesh. Those of you who watch our video blog may know about Sean Ahmed, a young man who is a graduate student at the University of Notre Dame.
I know, seriously.
I hope he's watching on Blog TV. Sean was a graduate student at the University of Notre Dame when he decided to move to Bangladesh to fix world poverty using money that he had saved for an Xbox 360. He has been astoundingly successful with the $350 that he had saved for his Xbox 360 at addressing serious issues of poverty in the developing world. It turns out that $350 goes a hell of a long way in Bangladesh. He was able to buy for a couple dozen kids mosquito nets that were treated with insecticide that allowed them to not get malaria for at least the next 5 years. Also, it cost $3 for a semester of school in Bangladesh for secondary school, so he was able to send dozens of kids to school who otherwise would have had to drop out. Since we started the Nerdfighter tool, we've raised more than I'd like to take credit for it, but I can't. Y'all have raised more than $2,000 for Save the Children, which will literally result in people who otherwise would have died not dying, which I think speaks very highly to what the Nerdfighter community can do. And through Sean and Save the Children, we're actually able to have a voice in how our money gets spent. So if you donate money, you should then go to see Sean's videos. He's at the Uncultured Project. Uncultured Project is his YouTube screen name. You can watch his videos, and we can actually decide where how we're going to prioritize our resources that we're donating to Save the Children. That there will be a black and white polka dot bag that you can give money to Save the Children in, and we encourage you to do that if you happen to have some money, which I know in these wonderful, overflowing economic times you do. thank God for this boom. I don't know where we'd be otherwise. You want to play a song?
Okay.
Oh, also, does anyone have a copy of my new Paper Towns that I forgot to bring on stage? Thank you. That was fast, man.
The song is about Paper Towns. Paper Towns is a book that my brother wrote. It's a really good book. I like it a lot. It's right. Everybody can. You can hold it up. Yeah, everybody. We've got a lot of dedicated John Green fans out there. Yes. I want to take a picture of that. Yeah. Woo! This song is about Margaret Roth Spiegelman, who is the coolest girl at Winter Park High School, and Q, who is kind of the nerdiest kid at Winter Park High School, and one day Margo shows up at Q's window and she says, "Let's go on an all-night adventure," and Q's like, "Oh, okay." And then, but she keeps asking them to, do things that he really doesn't want to do, but you can't say no to Margo Roth Spiegelman. The first thing that they do is they go to a grocery store and she gives them a list of things to buy at the grocery store. The song is about that list. It's called The List.
Can we do it the first time?
What?
Can we do it the first time?
Yeah. John and I sometimes compete about who can sing the word Vaseline longest. I'm sitting in the minivan. It's about 1 a.m. I can't believe I'm hanging out with Margot Roth Spiegelman. She hands me a grocery list, and I say, "What is this?" She gives me $100 and says, "That should cover it. 3 whole catfish wrapped separately, a 6-pack of Mountain Dew tissues and some beet, a dozen tulips, a bottle of water, a can of blue spray paint, a giant tub of Vaseline." Let's do it again. Sorry.
You guys spent 30 more hours in the car with me.
Okay. And a giant tub of Don't smoke. John smoked for too long. That's why you lose.
Oh, now you can't remember the words. So who's the winner?
She told about the Vaseline. Very specifically, there's a baby size, a mommy size, and a big fat daddy. The daddy is the one I need. I don't know why I need it, but you don't argue with Margot Roth Spiegelman. I agreed. 3 whole catfish wrapped separately, a 6-pack of Mountain Dew tissues and some beet, a dozen tulips, a bottle of water, a can of blue spray paint, a giant tub of Vaseline. Sometimes I feel like I'm gonna faint during this song. I walk up to the door of the grocery store, preparing myself for all the weird looks that I'm in for. I mean, what do? When the cashier looks at you and you've got those assorted items sitting there in front of you. 3 whole catfish wrapped separately, a 6-pack of Mountain Dew tissues and some beet, a dozen tulips, a bottle of water, a can of blue spray paint, a giant tub of Vaseline. And a giant tub of Vaseline. And a giant tub of Vaseline. I think that I want John to read some from Paper Towns.
And I think Hank is going to go entertain the you.
Yes.
Inside that camera.
Here I come. I'll be back.
Dan, will you read? Will you read like the first paragraph or something? Yeah. I far prefer it when this book is read by a professional.
Okay.
So they like your hat. Wow, thanks for dressing up, man. It's a deer stalker. Awesome.
You know that today is the opening of Huntington.
Yeah. Well, Dan obviously knew.
Absolutely.
It occurs to me that you might need one of these.
I can just read it.
Is that awkward? I do like you a lot.
You're not supposed to have gum in the library, are you?
No, you're not. You're
never gum. Pepper, town de pepper. L'hiver est en saison froide. Le petit petit. Margot Roth Spiegelman. All right. The way I figure it, everyone gets a miracle. Like, I will probably never be struck by lightning or win a Nobel Prize or become the dictator of a small nation in the Pacific Islands. Or contract terminal ear cancer, or spontaneously combust. But if you consider all of the unlikely things together, at least one of them will probably happen to each of us. I could have seen it rain frogs. I could have stepped foot on Mars. I could have been eaten by a whale. I could have married the Queen of England or survived months at sea. But my miracle was different. My miracle was this. Out of all the houses in all the subdivisions in all of Florida, I ended up living next door to Margot Roth Spiegelman.
I have to say what a rare privilege it is. I mean, I don't know if y'all know this, but Dan and Tracy are both in a band called Blanche, which is one of my favorite bands. Which is weird. So when they came to me and they said, we want this guy to narrate the audiobook, maybe his name is Dan John Miller, and I was like, wah, wah! And I completely geeked out. And then when we met, I completely geeked out again. I'm sorry about that.
That's true.
It was like a mutual geek out. It was sweet. But it is such a rare thing to hear someone else read your book out loud and have it sound the way that it sounds in your head, complete with like having a better voice than I have. And so I really I do feel so privileged that that you've been a part of this book for me. That's true, which is what I'll briefly say about adults and also teenagers and about this book. We have a really hard time imagining what it's like to be other people, like people other than ourselves, because we spend our entire lives stuck inside of our body, stuck inside of our skin, seeing out of our eyes with our consciousness, and it's technically impossible to imagine what it's like to be someone else. And in some ways, we have to take it on faith that they are as complicated and as interesting as we are. I think it's our duty as people to take that on faith and to imagine other people complexly, but it's really hard. And Paper Towns is in large part a novel about what happens when you don't imagine people and stories complexly. Those of you who've read the book, and I'll try to say this in a way that's not spoilery, but those of you who've read the book know that the novel is really about the relationship between the world we draw and the world that really exists, and how changing the world we draw changes the world that exists, and changing the world we imagine changes the world that exists. I'm going to read a part of the book that's about that. I will say this book, the reason it has two covers is because they're two different but equally incorrect misconstructions of this young woman, Margot Roth Spiegelman. After Q and Margot go on that all-night adventure that Hank was talking about with the Vaseline and the Veet and the whatnot, Margot disappears, and Q has spent the entire night thinking that like they're going to be friends the next day, maybe they're going to have a relationship, and he's misinterpreted everything that she said because he's seeing the world out of his eyes and is utterly failing to see her as complexly as he ought to. So I'm going to read a part that's about that, but not about Margot and Q. It's about the way we imagine a public figure and the way sometimes we imagine that public figure poorly or inadequately complexly. I think all you need to know for this is that Q's two best friends are Ben and Radar. Ben is this guy who believes the surest path to a woman's heart is to call her a honey bunny. And Radar is this kid who is like a semi-professional editor of a website that's identical to Wikipedia, except that it's called Omnictionary. A lot of people have asked me whether or not I named it Omnictionary because I was scared that Wikipedia was going to sue me. No. That is ridiculous. No one in all of human history has less standing to sue anyone for anything than Wikipedia. I mean, I love Wikipedia. I love the way it's this tension between those who would embrace knowledge and those who would destroy it. But certainly,
It is technically not copyrightable. So, so Radar has a girlfriend. He has a date for prom, which, as any semi-professional editor of Wikipedia can tell you, is a bit of a surprise. And Ben's a little jealous, and Q thinks the whole thing is ridiculous. This is Q and Ben meeting Radar's girlfriend for the first time. And it's about the way we imagine our public figures poorly, as well as our private figures. Okay. The walls of sound felt like they were closing in on us, and we were silent for a while. And then Ben looked at me very seriously and said, I'm going to get so much play in college. I'm going to be in the Guinness Book of World Records under the category Most Honey Bunnies Ever Pleased. I laughed. I was thinking about how Radar's parents actually were in the Guinness Book of World Records when I noticed a pretty African-American girl with spiky dreads standing above us. It took me a moment to realize that the girl was Angela, Radar's, I guess, girlfriend. Hi, she said to me. Hey, I said. She scooted a chair around to the head of the table. I figure you guys probably know Marcus better than anyone, she said, using Radar's real name. She leaned toward us, elbows on the table. It's a crap job, but someone's got to do it, Ben answered, smiling. Do you think he's, like, embarrassed of me? Ben laughed. What? No. Technically, I added, you should be embarrassed of him. She rolled her eyes, smiling, a girl accustomed to compliments. But he's never, like, invited me to hang out with you, though. Oh, I said, getting it finally. That's because he's embarrassed of us. You seem pretty normal. You've never seen Ben snort Sprite up his nose and then spit it out of his mouth, I said. But really, you wouldn't worry? I mean, we've been dating for 5 weeks, and he's never even taken me to his house. Ben and I exchanged a knowing glance, and I scrunched up my face to suppress laughter. What? She asked. Nothing. I said, honestly, Angela, if he were forcing you to hang out with us and taking you to his house all the time, then it would definitely mean he did not like you. Are his parents weird? I struggled with how to answer that question honestly. No, they're cool. They're just kind of overprotective, I guess. Yeah, overprotective, Ben agreed a little too quickly. She smiled and then got up, saying she had to go say hi to someone before lunch was over. That girl's awesome, Ben said. I know. I wonder if we can replace Radar with her. She's probably not that good with computers, though. We need someone who's good at computers. By the way, nice call saying that Radar's folks are overprotective. Well, it's not my place to tell her, I said. I'm not going to work blue because of sensitive ears. Just FYI. Last night, Maureen Johnson did this, whoop, instead of working blue, which was much more obscene than what the scene is. But anyway, the period was almost over, so Ben and I got up and put our trays under the conveyor belt, the very same conveyor belt that Chuck Parson had thrown me onto freshman year, sending me into the terrifying netherworld of Winter Park's dishwashing core. We walked over to Radar's locker and were standing there when he raced up just after the first bell. We just dined with Angela, I told him. Ben smirked at Radar and said, yeah, she wants to know why she's never been over to your house. Radar exhaled a long breath as he spun the combination to open his locker. He breathed for so long I thought he might pass out. Crap, he said finally. Are you embarrassed about something? I asked. Shut up, he answered. You live in a lovely home, I said. Seriously, bro, added Ben, she's a nice girl. I don't see why you can't introduce her to your parents and show her your house. Radar threw his books into his locker and shut it. The din of conversation around us quieted just a bit as he turned his eyes toward the heavens and shouted, it is not my fault that my parents own the world's largest collection of black Santas. I never thought that that line would elicit cheers. You know, like when you're writing something, you think like, oh, I hope people laugh at that, or I hope that makes them cry. But you never think like, oh, I hope that like a large room full of people claps. I'd heard Radar say the world's largest collection of black Santas probably 1,000 times in my life, and it never became any less funny to me. But he wasn't kidding. I remembered the first time I visited. I was maybe 13. It was spring, many months past Christmas, and yet black Santas lined the windowsills. Paper cutouts of black Santas hung from the stairway banister. Black Santa candles adorned the dining room table. A black Santa oil painting hung above the mantel, which was itself lined with black Santa figurines. The light-up plastic black Santa that stood in their front yard from Thanksgiving to New Year's spent the rest of the year proudly keeping watch in a corner of a guest bathroom. A bathroom with homemade black Santa wallpaper created with paint and a Santa-shaped sponge. Hard to say that. In every room save Radar, their home was awash in black Santa-dom, plaster and plastic and marble and clay and wood and resin and cloth. In total, Radar's parents owned more than 1,200 black Santas of various sorts, as a plaque beside their front door proclaimed, Radar's house was an officially registered Santa landmark, according to the Society for Christmas. You just gotta tell her, man, I said. You just gotta say, Angela, I really like you, but there's something you need to know.
When we go to my house to hook up, we will be watched by the 2,400 eyes of 1,200 black Santas. Radar ran a hand through his buzz cut and shook his head. Yeah, I don't think I'll put it exactly like that, but I'll deal with it. That's what I'm going to do. It's now, Hank's not here, but that makes me happy because that means I get to answer more questions. But Dan is going to be Hank in Hank's stead. And if you have any questions for Dan, you should feel free to ask them as well. Or Catherine. Yeah, sure, we can do that. Yeah, why don't you run up and see how he's doing? Okay. The Catherine, everybody. An American hero. Our secret siblings, Adam and Ava, who are here tonight, which I'm very grateful for. I love how they just reached for the Catherine as she walked out of the room. I'll take some questions. I think Hank is probably taking questions upstairs. Also, if you have questions for Dan, I'm sure he'd be happy to answer. And I'll answer one from over here and then one from over here, and then we'll keep going back until Hank returns, starting now with the hands rising as one. Yes. Why did I become an author? It seemed like a better... The questions are, what did you want to be when you grew up and why did you become an author? And the answer is that it seemed... Why I became an author is I always wanted to write, and then when I didn't need to have another job, I stopped having another job. What I wanted to be when I was little, I wanted to be a writer, but I mean, I never thought of it as a realistic career goal, really. When I was... right after college, I worked as a chaplain at a children's hospital in Columbus, Ohio, and thought that I was going to become a minister. But then during the period that I was working at the children's hospital, it was sort of too difficult and painful for me. Like, I wasn't able to process that level of trauma and tragedy well, which is ultimately, I think, what led to me writing Looking for Alaska. That and, you know, having known loss in my own life. So that's sort of what motivated me to start writing the book that I ended up writing. Yes.
John?
Yes.
It's me, Dan, over here.
Oh! I thought you were coming from inside of the box. I thought you were inside the box. Oh.
Can I be the guy I always wanted to do that? Because I always wanted to be a jury foreman, but can I also, like, when there's a question, run over with the mic?
Yeah. Yeah. So Dan's going to run over. Yeah.
The end of your... That's interesting that you put it that way. Well, another question? Who was it? Who was it who you picked?
It's right here.
Yeah. Oh, right here. Here we go.
I was one. Oh, okay.
You just said, I can't let you hold it. I have to hold it.
I was wondering, when you first write a story, do you think about what you want it to be about, or do you think about a scene first? What first pops into your head usually?
That's a good question. It's been so long since I had someone like Dan, I'm used to repeating the question, but I won't. The first thing, I start with characters, but I also start with... I do start with what the story is about in my head a little bit, but mostly I start with people. So in Paper Towns, I started with Margot. This could be Hank. I think that's pretty plausible, actually. I don't know who else would be calling me. Yeah. Hi, Hank. How's it going? I'm here doing the show.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Okay, he's doing the show too. Can you come up here? Yes, but later. That's all in the plan. Also, my phone's going to die. This isn't the most entertaining thing for the main room. I'm going to be honest with you. We were doing well earlier. I'm going to go now. Okay. Good to talk to you, though. I've totally forgotten your question. I start with a character. In Paper Towns, I started with Margot. I started with Margot and Q in the sense that I wanted to write a story about someone who was imagined poorly by other people in a way that was really alluring. Obviously, no one wants to be misimagined or overly simplified. But on the other hand, a lot of dudes do want to be Edward Cullen. So, how do you, for the boys in the audience who are like, who the F is Edward Cullen? Edward Cullen is a 107-year-old vampire who girls like a lot. Girls like him now. I know that you're over it, but you did like him once, and then you had to work through it. So anyway, so no one wants to be oversimplified, but on the other hand, everyone wants to be revered and loved. And so, what would it be like when you're constantly aware of this tension between who you really are and the way that you're imagined, you know, what would that be like? So that's really what the where the book started for me.
All the way in the back.
Hold on a second now. Where are you, sir? Okay. Hold on.
Dan is great at this.
How old were you when you started writing?
How old was I when I started writing? I was 8, Tank. Now, my phone is dead. That's why it keeps dropping your call. What's up? Okay, yeah, I'll answer one more question, yeah, and then I'll, okay, bye. Hank, you're going to move on to Hank soon. But I started writing stories when I was about 9 years old, but then I never was any good at writing them until I started looking for Alaska. And that's not being humble, it's true. One more question before I move on to Hank.
Who are you choosing, John? This gentleman right here?
Yeah, that gentleman right there.
Okay, let me just get a little bit of a, okay, hold on.
All right. I've always known that's like one of the major signs of being nerdum is being able to solve a Rubik's Cube, and I was wondering if you can solve a Rubik's Cube.
I cannot solve a Rubik's Cube because I have extraordinarily poor spatial intelligence. It's the same reason that I find it really hard to put polygons in my mind, which limited my ability to perform well on IQ tests when I was younger. But I'm good at some other stuff. I'm pretty good at rote memorization. Like, if I had lived in the 19th century and I'd been a school child in the 19th century, everyone would have thought that I was really smart. But unfortunately, I grew up in this, like, new world order where you have to be, like, really smart and not just memorize facts and figures and omoamasamat, and so I was an idiot. One more question. Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. I was wondering, once you wrote Looking for Alaska, how did you go about, you know, getting it to editors or...
Right.
Editors or I did not write... Oh, you were talking to him.
Oh.
He's lovely. I wouldn't want to switch places with you, obviously, but I would a little bit. The bulk of that time, honestly, was spent revising Looking for Alaska. I spent 3.5 years rewriting it with a woman who worked at the magazine that I worked for at the time, Bookless. Her name's Eileen Cooper, and really, it was with Eileen that the book became a book. And then after Eileen was like, I think that you should send this out, I just sent it to a couple of publishers, and very fortunately, a mere like 6 months and 18 days later, one of them bought it. So that was the hard part is getting the manuscript finished to me, and then you send it to agents and editors, and you hope that somebody likes it. And you never know if they will, but you hope that someone will. I'm staying here until Hank, there's Catherine. One more. I look a lot fatter in real life? Calvin. Sorry, I have body dysmorphia. Next question.
Any other questions?
Up here, maybe?
Yeah, sure. I could do that. Hold on. Excuse me.
Can you talk about how Looking for Alaska and Paper Towns are opposites?
I said that on my blog. Well, I mean, I think they're written against each other more than that they're opposites. I mean, I do think that they have very dissimilar, like, plot lines. One is called, there are two stories, right? A stranger comes to town and guy goes on a journey. And Alaska is a stranger comes to town, and Paper Towns isn't a stranger comes to town. So in that sense, they're opposites. But I don't know if you guys have heard of the term Manic Pixie Dream Girl, which was invented by a guy, Nathan Raven, who works at The Onion. The Manic Pixie Dream Girl, you know, her from Elizabethtown, or from, what was that stupid movie with Natalie Portman?
Garden State.
And, you know, she's this girl who she's very beautiful, and she likes nerds inexplicably because she was made up by nerds. And she has a deep well of sadness that only we can fill. And because we have the unique key to her heart, we fill her up with joy and meaning. And then, right? So Alaska, by nature of the plot, which I can't get into in any detail, but by nature of the story, yeah, this isn't a construction. I really do this. By nature of this story, Alaska, the idea of Alaska as a manic pixie dream girl, like Pudge's construction of her is never able to be punctured. It was in some ways because I was uncomfortable with the way that that book left the idea of a person who's more than a person unpunctured that I set out to write Paper Towns in the first place. I think that Q, at the beginning of the book, imagines Margot in a way that's analogous to the way that Pudge imagines Alaska, but it's also analogous to the way that every boy imagines every girl that they're in love with and vice versa, which you all know from Bella and Edward or Harry and Ginny or whomever it is. What we have to learn to do is to see people as people. And that's Q's journey in the book. The difficult thing about finding Margot after she disappears is not ultimately that finding Margot is so hard or that the mystery is so complicated. It's that when the characters in the novel look at Margot, they're unable to see her. They see some funhouse mirror reflection of themselves. And so that's what I wanted to get at, was that the challenge of uncovering the mystery of Margot is not so much figuring out where she is. It's a matter of figuring out who she was. And so that's very different, I think, than what they're after in Looking for Alaska, when they never come to any meaningful understanding of who she was, because it's not about that. Good question.
John, Ray Bolger, who played the Scarecrow in The Wizard of Oz, just texted me a question. He wanted to know about when the expression, don't meet your idols. Is there any similarity to that, or does that tie into anything to do with the
perception? I do think it's dangerous to meet your idols, right? Because you construct people so as so much more than being a person, and then you meet them, and they have poor posture, or
they're not really a scarecrow. They're just an actor
portraying.
They're
not really a scarecrow. They're just a dude who played a scarecrow. They have a nervous habit where they can't stop playing with their wedding ring, whatever it is. And I think... I think what we have to learn to do is not to idolize, rather than not meeting our idols, I think maybe it's better just not to idolize people in the first place. Like, imagine a world that where the word celebrity had no meaning. I think that would be a lovely world. That might be Hank attacking. All right, so I think I'm going to stop taking questions because I'm going to go up to the other room and Hank's going to come down here, although I don't know. Oh, I gotta go. Hank! Where am I going?
Hi, everyone. I'm gonna take a knee for a little while. Or a chair. How's it going down here? Okay, you asked John some questions. Quick, ask me questions. Yeah, in the back. When did I start singing? I wrote songs when I was in college, but I didn't know how to play guitar, so there was no accompaniment, and I was afraid to share them with people. One of those songs was Baby, I Sold Your Dog on eBay. That was really the only piece that emerged from that era of my life. But then I learned how to play guitar like 2 years ago. I started taking lessons, and then I had a reason to make music, which was Nerd Fighters. And that's really all it took. Was a reason in a guitar. MJ. Best nerd. Oh, there are so many. I remember. What?
Grand Rapids.
I mean, Grand Rapids was Maureen Johnson, John Green, and I were pulling up to the Grand Rapids stop, arguing about whether there would be 4 to 15 people. Like, we were taking bets. Like, and I was like, I think there's gonna be 15 people. And John was like, only gonna be 4 people. I've done these things before. There's always only 4 people, and Maureen was somewhere in the middle, and there were like 120 people, and John. He had a little bit of a meltdown, but it was just so much of a huge surprise, and we didn't know what was going on. We didn't know what to do. I didn't have a guitar, so this guy gave me one, and I played songs and. John and Maureen read books, and I mean, and then we were like, you know, we could do that, and now we're doing it. So I mean, without that, this wouldn't have happened for sure. But I mean, there was a time in Brotherhood 2.0 when every day something new and weird would happen, like somebody make a picture book about nerd fighting, or and then like sometimes people tape spoons to their fingers. So people who are now in the audience, like, I mean, how could you pick? How could you pick? That's all I can say. Are you familiar? Okay. Yes. Yes.
Like you mentioned once, like you never really talked about it, and I'm always disappointed that you said like when you were in college you didn't pay for food or anything. Can you talk about that? Because I've always been curious about that, but you never talked about it.
Well, I mean there's a word for it now. That is freeganism. There wasn't a word for it then. When the idea is that you get all of your food and some way that you don't have to pay for it. And it sort of appealed to me on the level that I felt like I wasn't having any impact on the world at all, which was technically not true because I had a computer which used power and I lived in a dorm room that was air-conditioned and I took showers and stuff. But the food also wasn't really very freaking. I would eat, you know, the college campuses are notorious for waste. And so at the end of the school year, I had rummaged through some dumpsters and found like full cans of peanut butter and unopened bags of pretzels and stuff. And so I ate that for a long time. And then I tried to find, and I mean, it was just sort of like this crazy, like I felt like I was too privileged and I should try it out. But like, you know, in places where people aren't privileged, there isn't food in dumpsters. Like, so it was sort of a silly idea that I had that I could have this different experience with the world. And I think that was worth doing just for the experience of it and trying to understand, you know, how that might feel. And also I was just sort of enamored by the idea. But like mostly, like I'd go home to Catherine's house and her mom would make these huge entrees and I'd be like, oh. So, yeah, I mean, it was a weird thing that I did. And that's what it was. And I completely forgot about it until you mentioned it. Yes, here.
Can I pass the microphone first, Hank?
Oh, yes,
so everybody can hear?
Sorry, I haven't been repeating questions.
Hi. Which of the songs that you wrote is your favorite?
I mean, all of my Nerdfighter inspired songs, I love them equally and sort of the same way, in that like, the more the Nerdfighters like them, the more I like them, so it's not really the way that I love them. And so like the songs that are about Catherine, which you've only, I think, heard one of, are like a sort of on a different place than those ones. So I would talk about those, except that there would be a lot of awing. Next. Yes, you.
When you write a song, how long into writing the song do you figure out a melody, or do you start figuring out a melody?
Generally after the first line. Like I'll write the first line, like Osseo Deathly Hallows, the first line that I wrote was I need Harry Potter like a Grindelwald needs water. And then I was like, that's a good line. And then I filled it in, and I can't write very many, I sort of filled in the meter to that line, and then I filled in everything else to that meter. And sometimes I do it without the guitar, sometimes I do it with the guitar, and then when I do it without the guitar, I'll play it and I'll be like, shoot, I put a B in! Because I can't play B chords, and I'll have to completely rewrite the song or change the key or something so that I can play the song. But yeah, that's generally how I do it. Start with one line. Yes. You can just say it into my mic.
Okay, one, if you want to learn a B chord, I'll teach you a B chord.
I know how to play it. It's just really hard.
Okay, and two, oh my gosh, I forgot my question. Okay, when you first started touring,
yeah,
and you guys were in Grand Rapids, you seemed really like shy and nervous and stuff.
Yeah.
But now that you're touring like crazy,
yeah,
you're so close to me. it's a good time. Now that you're touring like crazy, yeah, would you say you're a lot more used to it? Because you seem a lot more peppy and excited now.
Well, the big difference is that cappuccino I had. No, there's definitely, like, it was really overwhelming, and we had no idea what was going on. It was like, and it was. I felt like that event was like, we weren't in charge. And I like it when we're not in charge, but now we've done it a few times. And tonight has to be really quick because they're going to kick us out of the library. So we're all like, let's go. I'm before the shows, and this was the case in Grand Rapids, too, I'm really scared. And I pee like 25 times. And I like I finish peeing and I'm like walking to the bathroom and I'm like, whoop. And so I don't know what it is about that it's just like no bladder. And so I freak out for like 2 hours before the events, and then once I get on stage, I've noticed that it's on stage. Off stage. I notice that it's not really a big deal. Like, you know, I feel very much like you guys are my friends, and I'm like, like the great thing about nerd fighting is that like you screw up a chord and everybody's like, "Woo, that was awesome!" and it's not that the song is awesome; it's that you actually seem to like it when I mess up chords. And I appreciate that. So I, you know, I don't really feel like I can mess anything up. Next, yes, familiar face. She's coming.
What was the last album you bought?
It was Of Montreal, the Sunlandic Twins is what the album's called.
Can I have a follow-up?
Yeah.
Who would you say most influences your music?
I think that was a toss-up between They Might Be Giants and Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
I already asked. Yes. Yes. You're the only one in your area. Here comes the microphone. Long arms.
How long does it usually take for you to write a song?
It's pretty quick when the muse strikes. Like, so the reason I started writing songs is because we had this Song Wednesdays thing, and I had to write a song every Wednesday, every other Wednesday, and it would be Tuesday. And I'd be like, you know what I need to do? And so some of those weren't great songs. But the really cool thing is that gave me an excuse to just do it. And if the song sucked, whatever, it's done, because everybody's heard it. I think some of my best songs were written in, laying in bed when I had too much caffeine. And it took, I have found post-it notes. I think that I vlogged about this once, that have song lyrics on them, and I'm like, I don't remember writing that. But, definitely that's my most productive time, laying in bed when I've had too much caffeine, and I'm like, I need Harry Potter like a Grindelwald's water. Yeah. Yes.
I'd like to know, what's the status of Helen Hunt's possible awareness of her song? And just so you know, I totally agree with you.
I like to hear that. Helen, I don't think knows. But if she does, she's been very quiet, which I can kind of understand. I watch that video sometimes, and I'm like, oh. That's not the way to Helen Hunt's heart. But that's okay. Quick to the front. Come to the front, because there's questions up here. Yes, right here. Actual library employee.
Yay! I know you read a lot of fantasy, and I know obviously you really like Harry Potter, but other than Harry Potter, what's your favorite fantasy book or series?
I really like the Dune series. I really like Ursula Le Guin, so the Earthsea series, and also some of her standalone stuff, like The Dispossessed is sort of life-altering. And mostly I read science fiction. I don't read I don't focus on fantasy, but what's the difference, really? I like it when worlds are self-structured, where they explain themselves, and sometimes fantasy is like, and they have wizard powers. Because. And I like it, science fiction is like, and they have wizard powers because of an electromagnetic phenomenon and the power of the yellow sun, and you're like, oh, okay. the first science fiction thing that really sort of made me realize how nerdy I was and affected my life a lot was Kim Stanley Robinson's Mars trilogy when I was high school age, and I was like, you know what I want to be? I'm on Mars. Yes, you already have the mic. Well done. Careful.
My friend wants to know if Helena Montana is on your CD.
It is.
Can you play it now, please?
Well, there's no playing Helena Montana because it's a cappella. But I can sing it.
Yeah, sing it.
Helena Montana. Helena Montana. Golden cows and chopping trees. These are the industries of Helena Montana. Helena Montana. We played frisbee at the Capitol and looked at lots of belt buckles. Helena Montana. There's some things rhymes with... They serve your eggs with butter, and there were peeps in the gutter. Oh, Helena Montana. It makes more sense if you can see the video. Please check your guns at the door. Fat guy in a candy store. That's pretty much the punchline. Spoonfingers. Spoonfingers next.
What was the most embarrassing thing that you've done pertaining to, nerdfighting?
Like that Helena Montana song just then. It's all gratifying. It doesn't feel embarrassing when people enjoy it. for some reason. Yeah, I don't know. Like I have to put on a dress and pretend to be Sarah Jessica Parker. At some point, we haven't had a lot of time for punishments on the tour, but like I'm kind of a little bit looking forward to it. Just because I want to see the reaction, not because I'm a cross-dresser. Yeah, I mean, actually, there was a recent episode of The Office. One of the characters dressed up like, what's her name? And I was like, taking notes. spoon fingers. Down at the end of this row. Passy. Pass the salt. I was like, the salt.
I got it.
Spoon fingered people are very capable.
Favorite Star Trek captain?
Picard.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think there's really that much competition.
All right.
Wait, but, okay.
Pass
the pig. I don't know what pass the pigs is, but that sounds like fun. Sorry, I missed it. Go!
How did you meet Catherine?
In college, our rooms were like next door.
That's it?
So we went to the video store together to get the videos, and that was the first time I met her, and we started dating like a year later. Aww. And I love her so much. She's the prettiest girl in the world. Oh, you gotta stop bawling. Yes.
What's your favorite song that you ever written so far?
Didn't I just answer that one? I did. I answered that one. I said that
he was in the bathroom.
He was in the bathroom. I was saying that the song's about Catherine and our. And I was awing. He was in the bathroom. Aw. That's cool. I kind of have to pee right now too. everything I say from now on. Oh, poor Hank. I was saying that my songs about Catherine are sort of in a different category as my songs about nerd fighting, and the songs about nerd fighting I like, the songs for nerd fighters I like sort of in proportion to the amount that they are liked. So probably Osseo Deathly Hallows. Yes.
How often / do you ever go back and watch the Brotherhood 2.0?
All the time. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm really funny. If it's the lamest thing in the world, I'll sit down and I totally self-select. Like, I don't watch John's videos as often as I watch mine, and I'm like, oh, it's so lame. I mean, that's something that I could never say if I didn't feel like you guys were my friends. But like, because that is really lame that I do that. But I do, and I mean, not. Well, do you watch your own videos?
Yeah.
Go back and watch your own videos.
Hilarious.
Catherine will attest to this. When I watch my own videos, I pretend like I'm me in the video, and so I'll like make the same facial expressions, and my mouth will move very slightly, and along with the words that I'm saying. It's a very bizarre metaphysical subconscious thing. But yeah, yes, I do. Yes, please, ask.
Now that you guys have been on tour for a while, does it get kind of old, not as special anymore?
No. I mean, tonight is definitely not, it's definitely special because there are way more people here than there have been anywhere else. that wins. I mean, what gets old is the driving. But other than that, no, not at all.
Are you guys going to come back to Ann Arbor?
I hope so. Like, if we're going to come back anywhere.
Why did you try to hit John with a hammer?
I don't remember. I was, that was precognition era of my life. My mom doesn't even know, and she was there. Yes.
How often do you just randomly check the access logs of your of the Ning or of YouTube?
The access logs of YouTube? Like, well, YouTube doesn't have good access logs. It has like demographic stuff. But I mean, with EcoGeek, I'm obsessive, like 5 or 6 times a day. Less with Brotherhood 2.0 stuff, though I do check it pretty regularly. And you know, I'm. John is more obsessed with the number of video views we get per day than I am, but I find that number to be quite exciting. to this day. Like I remember being really excited about 600 views on a video and being like, oh my God, I can't believe 600 people are watching this. And now I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe 50,000 people watch that. And it's like the exact same feeling, which is strange, but you know, it's I love you all. This is my favorite. My favorite audience. What other adorable things can I say? Yes, question.
You and John always talk about how close you come after Brother Would You Know, how you guys came so close together after that. But about how far apart were you afterwards? I'm moving the mic. How far apart were you after or before Brotherhood 2.0? Like, I mean, I have a sister, and I don't really get along with her right now because I'm in college, and we're apart.
Right,
but
yeah.
After coming together, you guys started, you know, you're doing shows and touring everywhere.
I mean, I think that we were, like, about as apart as normal adult siblings are. Like, you call each other when you get engaged. You call each other when your wife is pregnant. No, we have not done that. we could have been a lot closer. We talked on this messenger mostly about, like, you know, family stuff. And so there wasn't really any working relationship where we were friends. There was just sort of the family relationship. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
When you went from Brotherhood 2.0 to the Vlogbrothers from every day to, like, once a week, was that a relief, or
it was a dramatic transition? Like, I found myself some days being like, "What is it that I do with my time?" And so I felt like the Brotherhood 2.0 era was like, there was not a moment in the day when I wasn't doing something, and that became less the case. And I was like, well, I mean, I know that I have lots of stuff to do. But there's that, like, the deadline of Brotherhood 2.0 was such a pressure that I always, like, was on and ready and needed to do it. And then when that deadline wasn't there, there was definitely a space where I was, And that went away. That filled itself up. Definitely. I mean, I was like, oh, right, I have a business to run. And have been doing a better job of that since the end. Yeah.
Can you do your happy dance?
Yeah. I need to do it in the middle. I had no idea if that was going to work. I was like, I'm going to try this, and there's a like 70% chance that I'm going to be bleeding at the end of it. Okay. Yeah. Everybody's stunned. Okay, I don't have any more questions.
My question's going to be a lot more boring after all of that.
Yeah.
It's EcoGeek related.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so we're here near Detroit. Can you talk about which of the big three companies you think is kind of moving towards being the greenest of the auto industry?
I think it's pretty obvious that GM is doing the most right now. And I very sincerely hope that they will continue existing beyond next month. I mean, it's really sort of frustrating for me to see the American auto companies finally wake up. And I mean, Ford and Chrysler are too. But it was sort of like, let's follow in the footsteps of GM. It's John. Hello? Okay, we have to switch. Are you coming back down here, or am I going up there?
Here.
Okay. I'm going to play songs for everyone, it turns out. Okay. Bye. I think the Chrysler and Ford have woken up too, but I think GM woke up first. And I wish they had woken up sooner. Maybe there wouldn't be as much trouble, though there would definitely be still be trouble. One more question, yes.
Hi, can you play Helen Hunt?
Okay. The question was, can I play Helen Hunt? Yeah, I think so. This song is about Helen Hunt, who is an actress. If you don't know who Helen Hunt is, some people don't because they're a little bit too young. but she's beautiful. When I was 14 years old, I had a dream about Helen Hunt. That's the end of that story. The first time I saw you was the day that I hit puberty. You played a beautiful girl, shunned by society. It wasn't your fault, you just smoked one laced doobie. That after-school special made me want to never do PCP. Helen Hunt, Helen Hunt, you make my heart do acrobatic stunts. You stand and face the brunt of the twister of my burning want. Helen Hunt, you know I'm mad about you. Well, I saw you naked in the water dance. It was as good as it gets in my pants. And for that, that's an inside joke. That's not as dirty as it sounds. And for that, I really want to thank you. Your husband's name was Hank, right? Well, my name is Hank, too. Helen Hunt, Helen Hunt, you make my heart do acrobatic stunts. You stand and face the brunt of the twister of my burning want. Helen Hunt, you know I'm mad about you. Once an ex-best friend of mine, he said he couldn't see how an old and ugly actress could mean so much to me. Well, a minute later, looking down at him bleeding in the snow, I asked him who was best comedy actress 4 years in a row. It was Helen Hunt. Helen Hunt, you make my heart do acrobatic stunts. You stand and face the brunt of the twister of my burning want. Helen Hunt, you know I'm mad about you. Helen Hunt, you know I'm mad about you. I don't know that one. I don't know that one either. I don't know that one. What? I don't know that one either. You guys, I don't know that one either. I need to learn some of my songs. Jeez. I don't know that one either. What? I don't remember. John knows the ones I know. He's always here to be like, play this one. And I'm like, oh, good idea. This song is about, did John talk about the difficulty of imagining others complexly?
Yes.
This song is about a woman who has difficulty imagining others complexly. When that happens when you're in high school or just in normal life, you can become inconsiderate to your friends. But when it happens and you're a monarch of a small country, you can become somewhat genocidal. This is a completely historically accurate song about a woman who had that very problem. It's about Queen Rana Valona I. Throughout history, killers have found ways to gather enough power to put millions in their graves. Henry just focused on his wives, while Hitler's war took 70 million lives. But I've got to wonder if those guys were worse than Queen Rana Valona I. Oh, Rana Valona, Rana Valona, Rana Valona I. They call her the Mad Queen of Madagascar. She'll sell you into slavery, or she'll boil you in tar. She'll dress you up in bloody animal skins and sick the dogs on you. A third of her nation died under her rule. If ever a reign of a woman was cursed, it was Queen Rana Valona I. Oh, Rana Valona, Rana Valona, Rana Valona I. Oh, I missed him. Shoot. I'm going to play Deathly Hallows because that's probably what that meant. This song is on my album 3.5 times. Once is the acoustic version, which you're about to hear. The other is a studio version, which always plays in my head now while I'm singing the song. because I, yeah. I can't stop it. And there's an annotated version with annotations, verbal annotations. And then there he is again. And maybe that's not what he's telling me. And then there's a string quartet version arranged and performed by Nerdfighters. Hello. Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Maybe play a song while we sign. Ah, maybe Dan will play a song while we sign. John has a request. That superstition one. He says he can do that.
I was thinking garbage picker.
He was also thinking garbage picker. I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with Dan John Miller playing two songs. Call dropped. This song I wrote just before the last Harry Potter book came out. And I was sad and I was scared and I was excited and angry. And I had all of these emotions, and I had to get them out of me. So I wrote a song about it. You want to hear it?
Yeah!
Okay. If you guys can sing along, that's good, because the more people sing, the less I play. The less you can hear me play wrong chords. Maybe you should just play the chords. I'm getting kind of tired of this pre-publication media blitz. You got all of muggle kind under your spell. Yeah, that's pretty good. In Grand Rapids, the first time that I ever played this song in public, that happened. People were singing along, and I was like, crying. Like I played right into that one. Don't you know the whole world's already gone and reserved a copy at Borders? Thank you very much for being here tonight. How many more books could you sell? Turned out a lot of books they could still sell. Now give me my book or go to hell. Cause I need Harry Potter like a Grindylo needs water. And as better day approaches, mine equals. Ooh, I'll see your deathly hallows, incendio, book sales embargoes. It'll be like Phoenix tears on a broken nose. Ooh, I see you, deathly hallows. I'm getting kind of petrified. What would Ron do if Hermione died? Or if Voldemort killed Hedwig just for yucks? I didn't know that was gonna happen. Have no confidence in theories about the Half-Blood Prince. What if Harry's brain is a Horcrux? That was true too? Holy crap, that would freaking suck. It actually turned out to be kind of convenient. Cause I need Harry Potter like a Grindylo needs water. And as Saturday approaches, my knee bruises. Ooh, Osseo, deathly hallows, incendio, book sales embargoes. It'll be like Phoenix tears on a broken nose. Ooh, Osseo, deathly hallows. Now I have to play. Now I have to play in beat. I can't do that. I've changed tempos like 13 times this song. Osseo, deathly hallows. Whatever's up the sleeves of J.K. Rowling, I bet it has to do with Snip and Breakably vowing to protect that pure blood plus face Malfoy. But in the end, I don't think it's gonna matter if Snape's good or if he's bad, because the weight of the world rests on our boy. Yeah, the weight of the world rests on our boy. Cause we need Harry Potter like a Grindylo needs water. And as that day approaches, my need grows. I'm gonna do this. This is fun. Osseo, deathly hallows. And oh my god, you're so loud. Sails and bars. It'll be like Phoenix tears on a broken nose. Oh, Osseo, deathly hallows. Is the camera on me? Osseo, deathly hallows. Ooh, Osseo, deathly hallows. Ooh, Osseo, deathly hallows. Ooh, Osseo, deathly hallows.
people were actually harmonizing just then. That was amazing. Okay. Oh. Oh no. Oh, is there more?
But mostly I'm just feeling sad.
Thanks, everyone.
I know this could end real bad, but I wish it didn't have to end at all. Yeah, I wish it didn't have to end at all, 'cause I couldn't care more about Harry Potter if Hogwarts was my alma mater. And as that day approaches, my Negroes, ooh, ask CEO of Deathly Hallows, Incendio book sales and bargains. It'll be like Phoenix tears on a broken nose. Ooh, ask CEO of Deathly Hallows. Ooh, ask CEO of Deathly Hallows. Ooh, ask CEO of Deathly Hallows. Ooh, ask CEO of Deathly Hallows.
You guys are way more awesome than I am. There's no doubt about that. Wow, 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 wow. I'm so tied up. I got confused. Oh, I want to do something to make you guys happy again. You keep being so sad. I've only done this at one of the shows, and Catherine wasn't there, so I'm gonna do it. Can anybody beatbox? No, there aren't any beatboxers in the audience. Okay, this is called the knee drop. It's so obvious that this has so little to do with John and I. Like, you know, there are about you know, millions of breakdances in the world, and only one of them is as bad as I am. And I mean, it's just so gratifying to have this experience, and I'm gonna get a lot of awes in this pretty soon. This is very obviously not about John and I. Like, we have no reason to make videos. We have no reason to make songs. I was never inspired to write songs that are awesome and funny and have the appeal that apparently they have without Nerdfighters. And we could never have made the videos. We could never have had the inspiration to do the amazing things that we do. We could never have had the resources. And breakdancing is hard. And we are so, so lucky. And John is lucky to have you as readers, and I am lucky, thank you, and I'm lucky to have you as viewers, and I can't tell you how lucky we are. And I'm so in awe of the community that I'm now a part of, and I really want to thank you guys for that. You're clapping for yourselves, which is awesome. I should be clapping for you guys. So John and I are gonna be around for a little bit longer. We're gonna be signing things. I'll be signing. Somebody already has a copy of my CD. Thank you very much for buying that. Yeah. So we'll be out there, and Dan John Miller is going to play a couple of songs, which I'm really excited about. Yeah. And you guys rock. And all the people in that last row are holding their hands up together, so I'm going to point at them. How quick? Okay, go really quick.
Okay, this is going to be good.
John and Henry, John and Henry, John and Henry, nerd fighters. John and Henry, John and Henry, John and Henry, nerd fighters. Don't sing like hands, let's see your happy dance. John and Henry, nerd fighters, DFTDA.
That's what I'm talking about! This is, that's what I'm talking about. Okay, I have to go. Whose is this? Thank you.
Okay, Hank?
Yes.
I'm going to direct people if you want to get signatures on
things. Yeah, am I up here?
You're going to be at the table here with your brother when he comes back.
Okay.
And we'll be selling some items up here. The books from Borders are for sale out in the lobby area. So if you want to line up right here, if you have something to have signed, please do so.
This concludes our broadcast. For a complete listing of upcoming events at the Ann Arbor District Library, visit our website at www.aadl.org or call the library at 734-327-4200. Press option 3 for events listings.
Because I need Harry Potter like a Grindelwald needs water, and as Saturday approaches, my need grows. Ooh, I'll see your Deathly Hallows, Incendio, book sales and bargains. It'll be like Phoenix tears on a broken nose. Ooh, I'll see your Deathly Hallows. I'm getting kind of petrified. What would Ron do if Hermione died, or if Voldemort killed Hedwig just for yucks? I didn't know that was gonna happen. Have no confidence in theories about the Half-Blood Prince. What if Harry's brain is all Horcrux? That was true too? Holy crap, that would freaking suck. It actually turned out to be kind of convenient. 'Cause I need Harry Potter like a Grindelwald needs water, and as Saturday approaches, my need grows. Ooh, Accio, Deathly Hallows, Incendio, book sales and bargains. It'll be like Phoenix tears on a broken nose.